Talking of Weston-super-Mare, that's where our guest now, Tony, grew up in the centre of Weston, Tony Giles. But at the age of 10, things changed for Tony, significantly changed for Tony. And a sequence of events has led to him exploring, and I was wrong with this, it isn't 50 countries he's written about and travelled to, it's 117 countries that he's written about and travelled to. And he's blind. Tony, good morning. Welcome to the programme.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
No, thank you for coming on the programme. Let's start with life before the age of 10, because that's when things began to change for
sure.
you. What was it like growing up in Weston for you then?
Fun, I suppose. I lived in a sort of a suburb of Weston near Wirral and grew up in a one-way street, so I always sort of knew which way traffic was coming. Mm. I was born with a rare eye condition,
yep.
so I could see shapes and shadows until about the age of 7, 8, 9. I was very light sensitive. And then that lens, light sensitivity just slowly, gradually disappeared. I also went deaf when I was 6, partially deaf.
So you're partially deaf, but it was at the age of 7 or 8 that the what you did have, which was the ability to see shade.
Yeah, it started to deteriorate.
So
and probably had no...
What can you see now, Tony?
I sense sunlight, so I know sort of directions east-west, but I don't see anything.
So no shape, no definition, nothing at all.
No, not even light.
No
street lights, no car lights, just sun. So, it has to be bright sunlight.
So today you're in a very bright studio. Can you sense that there's light in here?
Not with my eyes.
But you can feel it on your skin?
Yeah, I'm aware of it.
Now, that in itself would be a challenge, and that changed the way that you went to school, because you went to a different school, didn't you?
Yeah. It was gradual, though, so it wasn't like a sudden, one minute I could see quite a lot and the next minute I couldn't. It was very slowly, slowly. So I noticed it, but it didn't really sort of stress me in any way.
Right.
It was more sort of my teenage years when, obviously, teenage years are stressful anyway.
Yes.
And then it was sort of more of a struggle. But sort of 7, 8, 9, 10, apart from reading and writing, which I'd stopped learning, but playing around, running around, that didn't really change. Until later.
So you went to school. I'm told here you went on to university and you gained a degree in American studies.
Yeah, I have a degree in American studies and a master's in American foreign politics.
Okay. A master's in American foreign politics.
Yeah.
I just wonder whether the events of the last few weeks have piqued your interest at all.
I smile. The choice of two bad apples.
Yes, you could say that. Let's move on to what life was like. You go to university, you clearly, you know, a degree and a master's as well.
Yeah, I spent 6 years at a school for the blind, visually impaired children, and also eventually children in wheelchairs, paralysed. Mm. So I learned very early on that being blind was the most difficult thing. Although difficult, but not as difficult as not walking. And so that was a good learning curve. And I had GCSEs and went on to do A-levels. And that's what got me into university. And I studied through Braille and eventually computers with speech technology. And I learned to use a long white cane. And that's what gave me the mobility training. At the age of 13, 14, I was catching trains and buses home from Coventry to Weston to see my family and stuff. So I was independent by then.
So independent, the challenge that you had was something that you, to all intents and purposes, overcame. But I'm just reading on some of the notes that you've given us here this morning. I'm bearing in mind what you just said there, I'm surprised when I read what I read this morning about you struggled as well. This didn't come easy, did it?
No, it didn't come easy, especially having a dual disability. It's more the social skills, it's interacting and communication. It's funny, I always say to people, I find being deaf harder than being blind, because the deafness, it changes. In a crowd, it's more difficult, background noise, music, etc. Whereas my blindness is difficult, doing lots of small tasks and things, but it doesn't change, so it's constant.
So the challenge you have with the hearing...
You
wear hearing aids on both ears.
Yes, and I have done since I was 6.
But in a crowd, you have difficulty hearing anybody.
Yeah, anybody for a decent conversation. It's sort of yes, no, what, yes. very difficult, especially with analogue hearing aids. It's much easier now that the technology has progressed. I've got digital hearing aids. Mm-hmm. So one-to-one, I'm almost 85%. in a crowd, I'm down to 80% and 75%.
And that makes a heck of a difference, obviously.
Yeah.
And you also had a bit of a problem with alcohol as well.
Yeah, I did when I was sort of 17, 18. Yeah, I had a big problem with alcohol. I lost my dad and my best friend when I was 16.
Gosh.
And my best friend was almost like my brother, really. We saw each other every day, and I was his hands. He was my eyes for 5 years. So, yeah, it was a big shock. But I eventually got through the drinking when I was 22, 23, and I was able to move on, luckily.
Now, the challenge that you have, obviously, is you just clearly articulated there, is you can sense sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
You obviously can feel the warmth of the sun.
Yeah.
But you couldn't define any form of shape. And the challenge with your hearing is that you're okay one-to-one, like you and I are talking this morning, Tony.
Yeah.
But stick you in a crowded airport or a busy street or a pub or a bar or a restaurant, that's where it starts to become very difficult.
Yeah, much more challenging.
You decided to travel.
Yeah.
Against all that, I'm just pointing it out. That, you know, talk about the difficulty and then the reality. You put yourself on in airports, on planes, travelling in on public transport, all of that.
And in foreign countries.
In foreign countries. So you've got hubbub all around you.
Mm, yeah, it's a constant challenge. But that's what I love. I love that challenge from a young age. First doing it in England, on trains and buses in England, and then eventually abroad.
Where did you first go?
I got the opportunity to go to the States with a school when I was 16, to Boston for a week. And I found it like a breath of fresh air, because I find people in England, in the UK, quite reserved, quite quiet, not very talkative on the streets. They want to help, but they do it in a sort of quiet way. And I went to the States for the first time. Oh, wow. Large pavements. People come and talk to you. They just talk all the time, and that was for a 16-year-old. That was different, eye-opening.
What was the big difference between the infrastructure in the United States? I'm guessing around about 20 years ago or so, when you arrived there at the age of 16 to growing up in West-Supermare and travelling from Coventry to back home and what have you. What was the difference in the infrastructure?
Yeah, I mean, I'd been to London a few times with my family and stuff, so I knew what a big city felt like. But in the States, everything was bigger. Everything, the pavements were huge, wide. There were less obstacles to walk into.
I would imagine that would be a challenge. And I don't know, I've never walked around a city with my eyes closed. But wider pavements would be, you wouldn't know where things are, or is that actually a better thing?
Well, you've got more space, so there's less obstacles. And the obstacles that are, you've got more chance of missing them.
Right.
Whereas in England, pavements, obstacles everywhere, particularly these days, the signage. You're always hitting something with your cane or trying to get round something, cafes and stuff. Whereas the sidewalks in, say, Boston, New York, that they're so wide that you can walk between the furniture without really knowing it's there many a times.
Right.
Which is refreshing, especially when you're using a long cane.
Must have felt completely different.
And you feel the space. You feel the space around you. I do. My skin is sensitive enough to recognise that it's just a different type of area.
It's just before I take a pause for a piece of music, because I want to talk about the writing you've done, 117 countries. That's the second time you've talked about your skin. Your skin seems to fill in the gaps an awful lot.
Yeah, my skin, my feet, my sensitivity to changing in heat and coldness, and when I'm walking up and down gradients are very important.
Mm. And all of that comes, I'm not going to use the word compensation, but as a sort of contrast, perhaps. To
it does, but it has to be worked on. If you just sort of grew up and sat in a room all day, your sensitives would be similar to yours. But because I've been out there and putting my body on the line, as it were, those sensitives have become more sensitised.
So you learn to read it,
yeah.
But you also have to put yourself through it to sort of, you know, cause and effect. You have to understand where it comes from.
Like training, I suppose, yeah.
OK, let's take a pause for a piece of music. Then I want to talk about the countries that you've travelled to.
Sure.
I also want to talk about the fact that you've had a kidney transplant as well, which we haven't even got to yet, but we'll touch on that as one of the many challenges you face, Tony. Tony is from Weston-super-Mare. He's travelled to 117 countries. More from him after Frida Payne. Almost 20 past 11.
Is it?
Frieda Payne and Band of Gold on BBC Radio Bristol. We'll catch up with Steve Yabsley in about half an hour. Laura Rawlings back on your radio from 4 this afternoon. Diane Draper joins as well to discuss the next recommended read in the Monday Book Club. Laura Rawlings on your radio from 4 this afternoon. Still with us is Tony from Weston-super-Mare. Grew up in Weston-super-Mare, and we've been discussing about the two principal challenges that you've had that has not stopped you from travelling to 117 countries. You've written two books about your travels. But before we get to the books and what it's like to travel, we've talked about America, Tony. There was a small matter of you getting rather ill when you were travelling around and needing a kidney transplant.
Yeah, the first kind of cropped up in 2001, too, when I was I'd just gone off to Australia, sort of my first big trip on my own. I'd studied in the States for 4 months, 5 months. But a year later, I'd finished my degree and went off to Australia, and 5 month trip. And the day I got there, I received an email from my mum. One of the hostel staff read it to me and said, "Oh, you got kidney failure. You could die. Go and see a doctor." So I did what any young traveller would do. I went and got drunk. A bit shocked.
Yeah, that's a good idea. That's a good idea when you've got bad kidneys, is to go to a bar and drink lots of beer. Yeah, okay.
So eventually went to a hospital and they did a biopsy and they said, "Yeah, you've got kidney failure. You probably need to do this and that." And eventually after that 5 months trip, I went home and saw a consultant and put me on medication and said I needed to stop drinking and try to slow the kidney condition down. It's something to do with indigestion or sort of acid backflow as a child. And of course, you don't really feel anything, so I never knew I had this condition at all. And then, 7 years later, I had a kidney transplant, luckily in South Mead.
So, a transplant of kidney, that's that courtesy of your stepfather?
Yeah, my stepdad.
Your stepdad came up, stepped up for you?
Yeah.
It's quite a thing, isn't it?
It is, yeah, an amazing thing. Yeah, it's the kind of thing not anyone would just do. We spent Christmas in hospital together. That was fun.
At least you're spending Christmas with your family. Yeah. So all of these things that have challenged you, the problems with your eyes, which allow you only to sense bright sunlight.
Yeah.
The challenges with your hearing, which means one-to-one, fine, but you're in a crowd, you struggle to hear anything of any significance that allows you to have a conversation.
Yeah.
And the kidney transplant. Yet you have travelled to 117 countries and you've written two books, the first one being Seeing the World My Way.
Yeah, Seeing the World My Way. That came out in 2010. It was a Bristol-based publisher.
Yeah.
And then I wrote a second one and it was published earlier this year as an e-book, and that's called Seeing the Americas My Way. It was a trip I did in 2004 around South America and parts of North America, Cuba.
So the challenge you have, of course, is with the conditions that you've got, different countries are going to be different if you don't have those challenges.
Yeah.
Certainly South America is going to be different from North America,
yeah.
Different development, different perceptions, different ways they treat disability. What is the biggest challenge? Let's say you go to South America. What's the biggest challenge there?
Obviously a language barrier. I don't speak a lot of Spanish, and being hearing impaired makes learning languages difficult.
Yeah.
I'm able to pick up basic words and go from there, and you can sort of get the idea of a sentence by sort of hearing back and forth between people eventually by using my intelligence, but I still can't learn the whole language. So you don't really, you sort of get a basic idea of the culture, but not the deeper sort of idea of the culture and what goes on day to day. Language, using ATM machines, cash machines, in all foreign countries. In the UK now, some of the cash machines have got audio, so I can put headphones in. But, you've got none of that in South America or Africa, where I've been to 3 times. So they're a challenge. You need to find someone you can trust. And that's the biggest issue, I suppose, is trusting people. And I've had to do that all my life, getting people to help me across streets safely, help me use cash machines and banks without robbing me, things like that. Reading menus in restaurants. Because a lot of people, even though they can't speak the language, they can sort of point to things on a restaurant and a lot of menus.
Yes, exactly.
I don't have any of that.
Well, no, a menu with pictures has been absolutely of no use to you at all.
So what I tend to do is I tend to research the countries I go to and try and find out, well, what's the national dish of the country, and just sort of keep asking for that. And then as I'm traveling and spending, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, 4 weeks in a country, I'll meet local people and say, ah, oh, this is what we eat, try this. And then so you sort of learn as you go, really.
Why do you do it?
It's the challenge, the greatest challenge I can get. It's, if you've not travelled, it's hard to understand, but it's the buzz, it's the challenge of getting from one place to the next place, and you don't know what's going to happen. Every day is new.
And that challenge clearly is important to you.
Oh, yeah.
I can see that by your face. Yeah. I can see that. That challenge is clearly important to you.
Yeah, I love it. My brain is so active.
Right.
You know, that's why I was able to study and go to university, because I couldn't use my sight to look at the whiteboard or to take notes. I use my brain and my memory, and they're my skills. They're my compensation for not having sight, and I put that to use traveling.
Do you think you would have traveled, Tony, if you'd had better sight or better hearing?
My dad was in the Merchant Navy, so I always told people I'd have probably joined the Navy if I'd not been born blind.
Right.
I love the sea. Travel's just in my blood. It's just in me. My mum travelled around Europe when she was 18 with the railway. She worked for the railway as a sex. So, it's just natural.
Is it something, because of the challenges you've got, is it something that is essential to who you are?
I think so. Yeah, I think it makes me happy. It makes me, it brings me alive. Yeah, I think it's without travelling. Because obviously before I had my kidney transplant, we didn't know would there be a match or would I be on dialysis. And obviously having to think about that dialysis, I wouldn't be able to travel like I do.
Well, that would have totally contained you, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So what would I do if I couldn't travel? So, you know, so that was a challenge, that was a worry. And then, luckily enough, I got a transplant. I was able to continue.
Where are you off to next?
Next February, I'm hoping to go back to West Africa, Ghana, Burkina Faso, Ivory Coast, and work my way up to some friends that live in Senegal. So that'll be the next challenge. And then Japan with my girlfriend, end of April, May, for a month. And she's also blind. She's
right.
Greek. So she lives in Greece, so I live here, and we meet up. And
go travelling together.
Yeah.
Seems like a very good relationship.
Yeah,
so works. So, West Africa, then Japan, just two destinations next year. Just the two. One's obviously you're talking about travelling through a number of countries in the continent of Africa.
Yeah. I'd probably take the summer off and then go somewhere in the autumn.
Yeah, where do you go on holiday?
Sorry? Wow.
You say, take the summer. Where would someone like you go on holiday?
I'd say, I suppose Australia and New Zealand was a holiday for me. Yep. I'd been before, my girlfriend hadn't. So somewhere like the Cook Islands, there wasn't a lot to do really, and just sort of some cultural shows, but basically just sit on a beach for 5 days. There's not too much. So yeah, somewhere
don't
like that.
Don't strike me, Tony, as somebody who does sitting on a beach very well.
About an hour.
That's half an hour longer than me. I can't be doing with beaches. Thank you so much for joining us. Tony Giles has written a number of books, not least of which Seeing the World My Way and Seeing the Americas My Way. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming in this morning.
Information is available on my website, tonythetraveller.com.
Tony, thank you for coming in. Good to
talk to you. Thank you for having me.